I like to joke about, I make this little comment from time to time when I tell my story, this idea that step 6 and 7, nobody really understands 6 and 7. If you go to an open discussion meeting and you'll hear people talk about 6 and 7, you'll hear invariably someone will say, you know, gosh, there really isn't much written about steps 6 and 7. There really isn't much there. I mean, gosh, Bill only wrote one paragraph on 6 and then one paragraph on 7, and most of the paragraph on step 7 is just a prayer. There really isn't much to it. And my experience was kind of like that. I came out of my fifth step, and my sponsor said, okay, go home and be quiet for an hour. And when he said that, I knew he meant 3.5 minutes. Think about what I'd done with the first 5 steps. Was it real? It was great. Say the prayer, move on, and I'm done with step 6. I'm done with step 7. Let's get on about the business of making amends. I was about 3 or 4 years sober, and things were bad at work. I got this boss that I know doesn't like me, and I know he's trying to find a way to fire me. I sense it every time I walk into work. I know that this guy is like nitpicking, and he's looking at everything I do, and he's second-guessing everything. And I'm in management, and I'm supposed to be able to make decisions, but I'm afraid to make a decision because I know that whatever I decide, whether I go this way or that way, it doesn't matter. He's going to have an opinion about it, and I just feel uncomfortable. And I'm trying to manage people, and I know they don't really respect me. And I know that they're, you know, the only tool that I have, the only way I have to get them in line is through fear and domination, because I know that they all think that they could have my job and they could do a better job than me. And my customers are always, you know, they're just not grateful. You'd think they'd be grateful, but they're not grateful. They're always asking and demanding more from me, and it's just so difficult. And just work is just on my ass, and that would be okay if that was the only problem. But I tell you, home isn't great either, right? When I get home, I'm tired and I don't really want to think. You know, I work with the public, and the public are very demanding. And when I get home, here's what I want to do. I want to sit down in my chair and I want to stare at CNN. That's all I want to do. I don't want to talk to anybody about anything. And she doesn't understand. She just wants to come at me and ask me difficult questions like, how was your day? You know? And she wants to tell me about stuff I don't care about, like how her day was. What I really wanted to do is to put some food on a plate and sit and just be quiet, right? And my kid, play with me, talk to me, do stuff with me, right? He's making a noise and he's breaking stuff and he's and my home group, if Mr. Grateful shares one more time. I was at the meeting last night, the night before, last week, the week before, last month, and last year. And you have said the same thing over and over again, like my mother-in-law's parrot, right? You quote the same goddamn page. You learn something new. And I'm driving to my sponsor's house, and the guy that is in the car in front of me, now, this is a nice car. I know this car does more than 35 miles an hour. I'm certain of it. And I get to my sponsor's house, and I'm completely crazy. And I must have had this look on my face of just complete, just like, ah. And he opens the door, and he goes, oh, my God, I know that look. That's the Sheldon can't manage his own life look. You better come inside. And we sit, and I tell him what's going on, and I tell him about the job, and I tell him about my wife, and I tell him about the guys in my home group, and I tell him about the people in traffic, and I tell him about just how difficult life is. And he says, you know, you got a step 6 problem. And I said, what are you talking about? I'm paying my amends. I'm on step 9. I'm done with step six, which he thought was the funniest thing he'd ever heard. And he started to explain to me that step six for him and how actively he was involved in step six and what step six meant and what step six was trying to teach was the very essence of his sobriety. That to the extent that he was able to live in step six was to the extent at which he was allowing God in his life. And that step six was this journey that really is what AA is all about. I walk through this world with this self-centered fear, with this judgment, with this squirmy, incomplete, uncomfortable feeling. And I bring it to everything that I do. And I am constantly looking for things to take that away. I'm looking for attention and applause from my boss. I'm looking for attention and applause in my home group. I'm looking for attention and applause from my wife. And if I can't get it there, I'm looking for attention and applause in other places that I shouldn't be looking. I'm looking for something to make me feel whole and make me feel complete because I think there is something wrong with me. Because I feel incomplete, because I feel broken, I think there is something wrong with me. There is nothing wrong with me. As our friend Bob Bazant says, I am come from the manufacturer incomplete. I show up in this world broken. There's some beautiful literature it's not AA approved, and it doesn't care. Beautiful spiritual literature that says things like, everything that God made, he made magically broken. That what is wrong with me is that I am imperfectly human. I am human, and my humanness is a longing. It is a brokenness. It is a seeking. It is an emptiness. And that there is nothing wrong with that. The problem is that the human condition, as I have learned and I think is absolutely true, is that if there is something wrong, I demand to fix it. And I am trying to fix this human spirit that is designed the way it is designed, hungry for connectedness. Hungry for unity. Why does Bill not write much about step six in the big book? Perhaps the entire big book is about step six. Perhaps everything that is written up to page 76 and everything that is written after page 76 is designed to help me notice that what is lacking in me is a void, a spiritual emptiness, that my design, my purpose, the very reason that I am here on this planet is to find this journey back to the power, to find a connectedness to God. When I was new and we talked about step three, they would say things that, they were annoying and infuriating. One of my favorite things that they would say is I would say, I can't turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And some old timer would say, oh, it's just a decision. We don't really do anything in step three. It's just a decision. If three frogs were on a log and one of them decided to jump off, how many frogs would be on the log? And I want to say, well, two. No, Punky. Still three. It was only a decision. Maybe in step six, the frog actually jumps off the log. Maybe in step six, maybe the journey of step six is that when I feel these squirmy, empty, lonely, insignificant, unsecured, vulnerable, needy feelings that I'm trying to throw money and jobs and sex and food and shopping and vacations and all this outside stuff at. Maybe the very essence of the journey is that I'm supposed to now be willing to turn this stuff over to God. I walk through this world, and I've heard it said, and I think it's a beautiful analogy, as if there is a magnet inside of me. And this magnet attracts problems. It looks for and attracts problems. And so I go through this world, and it's like this hunk of metal sticks to me called work and work problems, and it weighs me down. Problems in my relationships, and it weighs me down. Money problems, and it weighs me down. problems with how I think you think about me, and it weighs me down. Judgment of the things that you're doing and the things that you should be doing differently, and it weighs me down. And it makes my spirit and my soul feel heavy. It snuffs out the light. It makes me feel like the world and its people are against me. It makes it hard for me to breathe. And worse, what I do then is I take the hunks of metal, and like a blacksmith on an anvil with a hammer, I turn these hunks of metal into a shield, into a wall that separate me and block me from you. And I put these things between you and me so I feel like I can be safe and protected. The problem with the wall is that now I'm alone behind the wall. Now I feel the separation, the anxious apartness. I create it with my judgment and my fear. I just wish that some of the stories of old were true, and that there was some kind of a spell, maybe a magic potion that I could drink that would turn the magnet off and stop me from reacting in the world that way. And then it occurs to me, there is. Whiskey. It turns off the judgment machine. It eliminates the separation until it doesn't, until it stops working. And then in a state of abstinence, alone and afraid, behind the wall, separate from you by my judgment and my opinions, by my fear and my squirmy emptiness, I find myself locked, stuck, alone, afraid. So I go through the steps, and I start to get a sense of connectedness. But inside me, there is this longing question that I want to ask God. I want to say to him, I want to say, Pops, let me ask you something. Because this, and I'm a little upset, right? Because God is God, and God can do anything, and God has that kind of power. And God could remove all of this from me. He could, I know it, because he's God. Ultimate power. Makes the trees, the sunrise, sunset, flowers, smells and sights and sunsets. I mean, God can do anything. God could render me to where I don't feel these squirmy feelings anymore. And you know what? You tell me that he is the Father and I am the Son. Well, I have a son. And if there was anything that I could do for my son, I would. I would make my son's life easier in a heartbeat. If it was possible for me to remove from him all the angst, all the uncomfortability, I would do it now. I love my son, and if God loves me, you'd think he'd do that for me too. And I got to tell you, I'm a little mad that he doesn't, right? I mean, you're right? If he loved me, he would. He could, right? Maybe he doesn't. Like, there are people in meetings that I don't believe them anymore, but I used to believe them. They act like, oh, right? And they want you to believe that he's done it for them. Why won't he do it for me? Why do I have to struggle and suffer this way? And I tell you, I have come to an understanding that is right for me, and it might not be right for you, but it is right for me. That the greatest gift that God ever gave me is my struggle. That the greatest gift that God gives me is my squirmy, insecure, self-centered fear. That the greatest gift that God ever gave me is my feeling of separation and aloneness. And I'll tell you why I think that. Because I know me. And if I woke up tomorrow morning with no more fear, if I woke up tomorrow morning with no more judgment, if I woke up tomorrow morning no longer feeling alone, I would wake up tomorrow morning with no reason to pray. I would wake up tomorrow morning with no reason to seek God. I would wake up tomorrow morning self-sufficient. And I've been going through some stuff in my life over this last year. It's been a really interesting year in business and other areas of my life. And I have prayed more in this last year than I did the year before. That all of these things that I wish did not exist in my life have driven me closer to God, not further away. And I'm blessed for that, because there are times in my life where it may have driven me further away. But what is the action of step six? What is the willingness that I need to have? It is the willingness that in the middle of the storm that I stop and I ask God for his help. That in the middle of the chaos, that I remember that the answer isn't for the absence of chaos, but is for the peace of knowing that God is with me in the chaos. That the magic of step six is the unity that God can give me in the middle of the desperation. And that without the desperation, without the hardship, without the fear, without the confusion, without the bad decisions, without the self-inflicted madness in my life, that I would have no reason to go to God. That what Alcoholics Anonymous is at its core is a program in which we remind each other that there is only one problem, as Chuck Chamberlain would say. And that problem is conscious separation from God. And that encompasses all problems, and that all difficulties and all of the struggles that I have at their end, at their core, at their bottom, where they begin and where they end, is that conscious separation from God. And if that is true, then there is only one solution, and there is only one answer, and that is conscious connectedness to God. That every problem, every insecurity, every squirmy feeling, every bad action, everything I regret and am ashamed of, that every one of those things can be solved with a conscious connectedness to God. I want to read a little something that I found, and Don and I were talking at the break, and he was telling me, with a little chagrin, he was almost a little embarrassed that he was telling me this, that he'd found this thing he shared with me, not what I'm going to read, but a different thing that he'd found it in all places. He'd found it on Facebook. And I want you to know that I found this particular reading on Facebook. But this is what it says. And this is a lesson from the Buddhist tradition. So a Jew is going to talk to a mostly Christian crowd about a Buddhist lesson. I love AA. I love AA. But it says in the Buddhist tradition, difficulties are considered to be so important to a life of growth and peace that a Tibetan prayer actually asks God for them. It says, grant that I may be given appropriate difficulties and suffering on this journey, that may my heart may be truly awakened, and my practice of liberation and universal compassion may be truly fulfilled. It is felt that when a life is too easy, there are fewer opportunities for genuine growth. And then it ends with no mud, no lotus. Without the manure, the flowers can't grow. So I have to be grateful for the manure, as much as I don't like the smell of my own manure. I have to be grateful for it. In step seven, it says, we say something like this, my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. Why would I want to give God good and bad? Why wouldn't I just want to give him bad? If I've learned anything about me, it's that I don't know what's good and what's bad. When I was new, you know, Don talked about this the other day. He said, geez, you know, pick someone that's got what you want. And when you're new, right, what do you want? If I think hookers and crack are a good idea, right? I'm that guy, right? I don't know what's good and bad. God, take what's good. Take it all, Pops. Take it all. I offer that you should have all of me, the good and the bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character. Not every single defect of character, but only the ones that stand in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. I have a character defect that causes me more pain and more problems than just about anything else on a consistent basis. I say inappropriate stuff at the wrong time. I can't keep my mouth shut. And I wish God would take that from me. But he seems to find it useful on a Saturday morning in Alabama, so he lets me keep it. But Pops, could you at least temper it a little bit when I get home on Monday? Could you at least let me keep my mouth shut a little bit, right? Remove every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. If I walked in here and you guys were pure as the driven snow, who would I identify with? If I walked in here and you were problem-free, to whom would I bring my problems? If I walked in here and you were self-confident and you were at peace, who would I bring my insecurity and my chaos to? Wilson says that we are joined together not by our virtue, but by our difficulty. I can't help it. Something good happens for you, and I'm a little happy for you and mostly jealous. It's just the way I'm wired. Right? Oh, you got a new car? That's nice. I want a new car. Right? But in your struggles and in your pain, it is how I find connectedness and unity to you. So God allows us to be pure enough and happy enough and stable enough to stay sober and broken enough and human enough to allow us to be connected. And it is the connectedness that I crave. It is being joined to you through your defects and through my defects that I truly crave. Grant me strength as I go out from here where I'm locked, to do your bidding, to join the world, out from the prison I create with my judgment, my squirminess, and my insecurity. And then the seven-step prayer ends with a simple amen, which is worth noting because the third step had no amen. It seems like we've been on this journey of prayer from 3 through 7, of trying to become comfortable and honest about my insecurity and my flaws in my character, so I can become compassionate and caring about your insecurity and compassionate and caring and forgiving of your flaws and your insecurity. So I can do the one thing that I have craved. So I can find unity, connectedness, and allow through humility the separation to start to die. Done.